You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Covers kickers more than most college scouts.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by DiGiorno. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined on a boat that's filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Look at us. How about us?
Are you listening, Raj? Are you listening, Kamish? Are you proud? We're spending your money. We're on a boat. We're here in Miami. We got nothing else to do.
We are on beautiful Miami Canal.
We do not know if that is the actual.
The Miami River.
Okay.
Nope.
Oh, Canal?
River. It is the Miami River.
The beautiful Miami River. Taping our first show from Miami.
On a yacht.
Super Bowl 54 coming up in a few days. And Erica, our wonderful producer, who put this together. Wow. You know, you're a marvel.
Yeah, you know, shout out to Jane Slater. Her brother Tom works for Port de Stella, which is putting on this whole event all Super Bowl week, and they hooked it up, and it's so sick.
Wow, that's clutch.
Seems like it would have been an opportune time to have Jane on as a guest, considering that her family member got us this speedboat.
Yeah, she wasn't available.
A little bit of a missed op, potentially. But anyway, did I mention that this podcast is presented by DiGiorno? Stock up on DiGiorno pizza for the big game. There we go. Yeah, that's what Super Bowl is about in a lot of ways. It's America. It's about corporate structure. It's about ad reads.
Sure.
But it's also, Wes, about football, isn't it?
Family, friends, football, and DiGiorno.
Very good. Very good. So today's show, this is our second boat show, actually. We did one on the River Thames a couple of years ago in London. And that was nice, but now this is way better. I got to be honest.
Oh, the vibe is decidedly different here.
Mark, we're in Miami.
We're in Miami. We have like sleek high rise buildings around us. Bunch of like nines and tens have been rolled in from various countries staying at our hotel. Beautiful.
And you've been very clear to point out that both the men and the women are nines.
Oh,
and
it's
tens.
Not a. Yes. It's a. It is extremely attractive people being piped into our.
I mean, we stepped
location.
On the boat with some, you know, great sort of Miami inflected. Music. I think this should be our thing, doing audio podcasts
music.
In far-flung locales where we just describe where we are for the audio listeners.
I can't even begin to understand.
Going under a throughway at the moment.
A boat just crashed into the side of our boat and we're sinking. No,
that was the singing bridge.
This is a fun experience and we love... to mix things up.
We just passed a sign that says caution manatee area. So if a manatee jumps up and kills Mark, it's just
tough
ultimately
sitch.
The way we all expected
don't
it
think
to
that's
end.
In a skill set
an incredible
tough
way
sitch.
To go.
How are you doing, Mark, in Miami? I know the city with all its glitz and glamour and beauty. Some of the texts I've been getting for you, you've been a little up and down. Are you excited about being here?
That's always the case. But I would say that it's growing on me at a rapid pace. You know, yesterday it was sort of overcast and you're wandering around to kind of trying to figure out what the city's about. Now we're on this boat, and it looks like you know, the cut scenes from like Miami Vice. I'm all in.
Feels like freedom.
It does, to a degree.
It's a panoply of the senses. It's a feast for the eyes. This is already 2 days into it, my favorite Super Bowl city.
Wow.
It's just
shots fired at New Orleans.
I haven't been to New Orleans yet. New York was holding the number one spot, and I do love New York City, but this is where you want to have a Super Bowl.
I still stand for the Best Western in Minneapolis that had a TGI Fridays connected to it.
That was close to the heart.
All right. So what are we doing? Essentially, it's all about the big game, of course, the San Francisco 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs. On Thursday, you're going to hear our proper Super Bowl 54 preview. But, of course, we're going to hit on the game pretty hard today. In fact, using our deep well of knowledge when it comes to this event, Mark, this is you and I. This is our ninth Super Bowl with NFL Media. Greg, how many Super Bowls have you covered?
This is the 13th I've been to.
13 for Greg. Wes, you're...
I believe this is my seventh.
So we, you know, you start to learn that the two-week break from the NFC and AFC title game to the Super Bowl, it's a breeding ground for just soggy narratives sometimes. Narratives that don't always really check out when the game actually begins. Or sometimes, conversely, they're spot on. So since we're on a boat, sink or swim narratives of Super Bowl 54. See how I did that, Erica?
I love it. I love it. Great job.
The person who throws out the worst narrative gets thrown overboard, and we just see
oh,
what
I love that. That's great. But before we do that, let's. I just want to a shout out to the whole crew of the Van Dutch who are keeping us alive right now, and especially Captain Spiros. Because without Captain Spiros, without the man at the wheel, it's lights out for the ATN podcast. You hear me? We'd be at the bottom of the river.
Also want to send a shout-out to all the people who have been buying our concert tickets or our show tickets on Thursday this week at the Miami Improv. It's bumping up. The 49ers and Chiefs fans are coming correct, but we still have tickets available Thursday night at the Miami Improv.
One of us will not be appearing, depending on who drops the laziest narrative.
Well, I was thinking of going the other way, which was Wes, Dan, Mark, all get the night off. Greg Rosenthal, one man, one spotlight, one mic, Rosenthal, in my stories.
Tamposi will jump in with me. She loves a live microphone. We'll do it together. It'll be fun.
He's going in the river, I swear to God.
Just all right. Greg sitting on a stool spinning yarns.
let's do some news.
I wore the number 24 in high school, like my freshman, sophomore year because of him. And I wore Kobe Bryant basketball shoes because of Kobe Bryant. Every time I laced up my basketball shoes, I felt like I had Kobe Bryant with me. I had a little part of him. I had his jumper. I had his fadeaway. The amount of hours I spent practicing that fadeaway from the corner. And I never made it, but I tried, and I always thought I was Kobe. So, he's an icon. He was a hero of mine. And the world's not a better place without him.
Well, there it is. George Kittle, the Niners tight end from Media Night last night, talking about Kobe Bryant. And, yes, this is obviously – it was a unique opening night because this is a unique time on the American sports spectrum with Kobe Bryant's tragic death in that helicopter crash in L.A. I came into the city a day after you guys, by the way, for the listeners – and so I was in L.A. when all the Kobe fallout was happening. It was such a surreal day in Los Angeles. And I was in a text chain with my buddies from back east, and we were – one of the guys asked, is this like the biggest L.A. sports story ever? And it's almost – it's you can't really look at it that way because Kobe's death, and then you have – you can't say like, oh, Kirk Gibson's home run or Magic Skyhook – This feels like a tragedy that just is bigger than obviously sports, and you could feel that throughout media night because that's all anybody wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I noticed when I got in, just talking to NFL Network people who were raised in LA and grew up with the Lakers as their favorite team, and they were visibly shaken up to the point where you could see that several of them had been crying probably for hours. I just, not being from LA myself, I was a little surprised at how much of an impact that made.
I think LA, like, the rep is that nothing brings LA together. It's just kind of this far-flung place with no center holding it. But the Lakers are kind of what holds it. I mean, the Lakers are what holds it. And Kobe, even people that aren't from LA, NBA superstars have a level of fame and attachment, I think, from their fans and people worldwide that NFL fans never will. Like, Kobe is at a level that no NFL player has ever been at. I just think it's just different.
Yeah, and the Rams and Chargers are both finding out firsthand in 2020 that LA remains a Lakers town and a Dodgers town first and foremost. And I remember being downtown the last time the Lakers won a championship, and I didn't know what was going to happen that night. It was not the smartest move, but it was incredible to witness the scene down there and just what the Lakers' effect is on Los Angeles. And Kobe's, I think, is what we saw like last night on media night too. The entire aura of that event, which is typically sort of open to clownishness and fun and games, had a completely different feel because of the immense effect he's had on so many NFL players.
I mean, this is supposed to be the NFL's week, and I was in our hotel last night, and I turned on SportsCenter, and they never talked about the Super Bowl once the entire episode. So this obviously, the whole week was changed by that tragic event in Calabasas. And we'll hear from Richard Sherman a little bit later, an L.A. native. But let's get to the NFL news now. And we'll start. Mark, you know what?
Actually, before we do this, can we do some breaking news?
Breaking news, yes. Let's hear it.
Magnitude 7.7 earthquake hits near Cuba. Miami offices evacuated as of 15 minutes ago, and we're out on a yacht right now.
Whoa.
Are we in great danger?
I mean, we're... Not
minimal
sure.
Danger?
Not sure.
I mean, this might be the place to be, but it does explain the helicopters flying overhead, perhaps. There's been a number of them.
Guess a potential tsunami heading
really
our way.
Scary number.
Don't mean to laugh. It's just a nervous laugh.
So there's a potential tsunami?
Yeah.
And we're on the water. Okay.
Maybe we should look into it?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, so.
well, there's never been anything inaccurate on Twitter, so we're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, that's interesting.
So just keep going.
Now to the Cleveland Browns. Hey, Ricky, honestly, though, keep us updated on the tsunami situation hitting Miami.
Apparently buildings, were shaking in Miami, but we did not feel it.
We didn't visibly see them shaking.
No. Wow. I can't shake that's a 50-foot yacht.
All right.
Let's the wind start. Is blowing Dan's notes all over the place.
That was Ricky's
Jim Gray
moment.
He's used to having in one place, having a whole system, and this is all...
My system has been torn asunder. And now Erica has collapsed on the deck of the Von Dutch. What tragedy. All right, let's get into it. The Browns have hired Andrew Berry as the... I'm thinking about the tsunami.
I know, I can tell. Let's battle through. We're pros.
The Browns have hired former team executive Andrew Berry to be general manager and executive VP. The team announced this on Tuesday, made it official. He has 53-man roster control. He's just 32 years old. He's the youngest GM in the league. Mark, the Browns have been – the latest iteration of the Browns reboot has Jimmy Haslam, the owner, saying we need to be in lockstep with the head coach and the GM. I imagine this is a step toward that.
Well, I think if you want to spin hopeful and positive about the Browns and what happened since Freddie Kitchens was fired was that they methodically went through this process and didn't matter how long it took and didn't rush to hire someone because they want a unified front office and coaching staff with Stefanski, John DePodesta, and Paul DePodesta, and with Andrew Berry, who was with Cleveland during the Sashi Brown regime and massively impressed the Haslams. They wanted him back. He was with the Eagles last year. I think this is essentially looking at DePodesta's from Harvard, Berry's from Harvard, Stefanski's from Penn.
Bunch of smart guys.
Well, that's I think they are looking for people that can coexist and keep this thing together for more than 1 year. We will see.
If you're a Browns fan who might have been a little worried that it's going to be too analytically driven, like baseball and Wall Street influence, and it's not going to be enough football influence, this is a guy you love as a hire because he was a three-time Ivy League cornerback at Harvard. When he graduated,
his coach, potentially.
When he graduated, his coach said within 15 years, by the time this guy's 37 years old, he'll be running an NFL franchise. He's that special. He's that whip smart. And you combine that with his football experience. He scouted for 7 years with the Colts. To me, he combines both of those, the scouting background and the analytics background.
If you wanted to take a more negative slant, you could point out that what seemed like their first choices turned down the jobs, or at least some of their top choices. George Patton, who had worked with Stefanski in Minnesota, didn't like the structure that was set up, and he might have been the GM otherwise. Josh McDaniels, it was kind of a similar case. I am hoping for the best. But at this point, I feel like we are all – I want to become a Browns fan because a successful Browns team, it makes a better podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen –
How do you know?
I want it. Well, maybe not a better podcast, yeah, but makes my life less stressful.
That's unpaved road.
Here's my situation right now with Captain Spiros and the crew of the Van Dutch. If we see them getting nervous and you see Captain Spiros like on his radio a lot and stuff, that's when I'll get nervous. So I'm just judging. Right now, Captain Spiros has got a smile. Are we safe, Captain?
Of course.
Of course, that's what you would say if you're the captain, because number one, you want to keep everyone on board calm. So he's not going to be honest, is he?
No, oh, yeah. For the listeners, there's no way they could have actually heard that. He just started screaming and like running his hands through his hair.
No, wait. Captain Spiros has jumped off the ship. And is anyone else able to? No.
This Captain is a Spiros seasoned is a mariner. He has everything under control. You know the kinds of situations he's been in? The pickles he's pulled out of? Come on, man.
All right. Hey, Mark, Dan, good luck to that. What?
I Googled, can you survive a tsunami on a boat?
Yes or no?
And it says, the safest place for a vessel in the event of a tsunami is offshore in deep water. So to the ocean, Captain Spiros.
Take us out on the mighty Atlantic.
No one has ever tried to order the captain around before.
All right, moving on. Good luck, Mark, with this latest regime.
Thank you.
Drew Brees has, speaking of Jane Slater, our good buddy, Drew Brees, the Saints quarterback, is a free agent. He's landed at, I believe, number 37 on Greg Rosenthal's top 40
he's
free
eight.
Agents.
He's safe.
Okay. Anyway, he's 19 years into a career, and he's not ready to announce yet whether or not he's coming back. But if he does, it will be with the Saints. Here's what he told Jane at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I've never been in a situation where I said I was mulling over the thought of
clarifying that. Then,
yeah, it's been each one of these contracts, which I don't know how many it's been, with the Saints. I played with them 14 years, but each one, it's not a matter of if it gets done, it's when. And obviously at this stage in my career, it's not a given that I'm coming back every year. It's just, but when that time comes, then I'll always be a Saint.
Saints fans are taking this pretty seriously. They think he might genuinely retire. This is different than he's talked about before. I think it's negotiations. I think Sean Payton and the Saints have not so subtly put out some reports and even talked about, in the last couple of days that, well, if we had to move forward, with Taysom Hill, we, of course, they want Drew Brees back, but they have other franchise quarterback options in Taysom Hill. And Drew Brees, maybe the most calculated player in the NFL over the last 10 years, is not making these comments to NFL Network by mistake. The only leverage that he has is retirement in terms of his contract talks. And if he does retire, that's not a good outcome for the Saints because they have $20 million in cap it and they still don't have Drew Brees.
Greg just put that issue to sleep. Nothing
I don't
more
know.
Needs
no
to
one,
be said.
No one, people aren't buying this. This is more of a theory than, fact.
What was the report out there that the Saints view Taysom Hill as a potential franchise quarterback? Where do I read that?
I mean, Sean Payton,
said that very strongly. And, he had high praise for Taysom Hill before the season, of course, linking him to the skills of Steve Young. But I think it would be fascinating to, at some point in time, watch Taysom Hill attempt that role. I really think
Absolutely.
It would be super exciting.
I think he's going to get a chance at some point.
Do you think on one level the Saints would be a more interesting team to follow with Taysom Hill as their starting quarterback?
Out of the gate. I mean, it's a tall order
you
to follow.
So.
But
I don't understand, and this maybe is directed at US. I don't understand this subtle Drew Brees shade that's popping up every time he comes up. This guy could still play.
Of course he can.
So what are we doing? Why would we want to get
Taysom
rid of him?
Taysom Hill is one of the most interesting quarterbacks in the NFL. Whenever I see him play, he makes plays.
They've made it clear. The Saints have made it clear. They want him back. So I don't think they are entertaining.
Is this a Steve Young, Joe Montana situation? If that was the case, I could understand the urge to maybe make the move. Do they really think that Hill has that type of
I think there is a parallel upside there because of the fascination in-house to Taysom Hill. And if you're if you're Sean Payton,
except for the background as a great quarterback, which Steve Young had, and Taysom Hill just doesn't.
That's fine, but he wouldn't be in the role he's in if he had a long track record as a quarterback.
Whenever he takes the field, exciting things happen.
I think if you're Sean Payton,
but
there must
part
be
of it too.
Yeah, but I think if you're Sean Payton, there's a part of you that would find it an incredible, interesting, engaging challenge to try to see what you have with Taysom Hill.
It's also telling that Teddy Bridgewater is not mentioned in any of this talk, and he's a free agent too, and feels like it's more possible this year that he'll leave, just because I don't know if he could see a
being outplayed by the quarterback behind him too. So
I'm not saying the Saints would be better with Taysom Hill. I'm saying for me, who's watched this show, the Drew Brees show, for how many years? 12 years in New Orleans. It would be more exciting to watch Taysom Hill.
They feel like they need to run it back one more time. They have so many free agents, so it's going to be a little tricky. I think they have 8 starters. But with Brees at this age, it's like, let's try one more time. We've had a Super Bowl-worthy or ready team the last 2 years, and then after that, you get wild.
And I guess my counter to that, Wes, is I hear that, but what if he does get the job, and after 4 weeks, it's like, oh, this guy was perfect in the role he had, and we kind of pushed Drew Brees out the door when he was coming off?
Oh, I think that's absolutely a possibility.
Season.
I think I've just, I'm oversaturated with the Drew Brees Saints, especially when you see a playoff game where his lack of arm strength was a huge factor, and the only plays they made were when Taysom Hill was making them.
All right, let's move on. Speaking of veteran quarterbacks, Philip Rivers. Wait, Boat, check. Is he on the radio? Kevin Spears is not on the radio, so
I'm
feeling
good.
Seems
of calm demeanor at the moment.
All right,
it seems
good
to be, you know, when another boat passes us, then we get a little rocky.
A little wake.
It's not the tsunami.
That's
yes.
A wake, Greg. The Van Dutch, the entire crew is actually very cool right now. Which
yeah, they're walking around and they're nowhere. Yeah.
All right, so Philip Rivers, his future with the Chargers remains up in the air. There was a report that floated around a couple days ago that was attributed to Jay Glazer that the Chargers were moving on, but that maybe is not exactly the case and wasn't even Glazer's reporting. And Ian Rappaport, our own Ian Rappaport, said the franchise is still weighing its options on their 8-time Pro Bowl quarterback. We know the whole background by now, 38 years old, coming off an interception frenzy season, and he just picked up his family and left California for Florida, closer to his hometown. What do you think, Mark? Is this? Do you think there's any chance he's a Charger in 2020?
I just would like to hear more dating back to even the middle of last season where the team is saying this is what we want. To me, Philip Rivers seemed to be kind of quietly at odds with that coaching staff by the end of the campaign where, you know, there were whispers of him potentially being benched at this point. He's just moved his family across the entire country. Now, we've brought up the scenario where he could be one of these guys that, you know, goes home for a day or two a week and spends the rest of the time on the other side of the country. It just feels to me, if from a family planning issue, which is the super important of Philip Rivers, an odd departure from California if you're going to go back to the...
And from Anthony Lynn's perspective, I imagine it was incredibly frustrating when Philip Rivers was your quarterback last season. There were so many, if you watch those Chargers games, so many mistakes that just would kill them. And Rivers, every once in a while, would look like Phil Rivers as well. He had his moments. He wasn't a complete washout. Wes, those mistakes, they add up, and you could tell Lynn, you understand his frustration and maybe his thought, like maybe Sean Payton, like, what if I had a fresh start with a younger player?
Right. It feels like the relationship may have run its course, and both teams are looking to get separated. And I think if the Chargers detect even a whisper of the fact that somebody's going to give Philip Rivers a pretty good contract and install him as their face of their franchise, they're just going to franchise tag him themselves and try to trade him.
Right, because that would be the most Chargers thing possible. A guy who has started 224 straight games, the second most in NFL history, behind only Brett Favre. I mean, everyone sings sea poems about Eli Manning's durability, as they should. Philip Rivers has never missed a game in his entire career. It's even longer than either of the Manning's streaks. It would be fitting for the Chargers, who have botched basically their goodbye to every great player they've ever had, for his last days to be a protracted struggle where they franchise tag him and then trade him for like a sixth round pick to the Colts and alienate a player who has been far better than the offensive lines or the running games or basically anything that Tom Telesco has surrounded him by.
I think it's telling too, and it's concerning for the entire Chargers organization, the lack of Philip Rivers buzz compared to Eli Manning, because the fan base does not exist right
now. But Ian made it clear they're considering franchise tagging him, and his wording was, he made it sound like they're probably ready to move on, but they want to make sure they can do better, and they're not really sure what they could get behind door number two, so they're not totally closing the books on Rivers. They have the number six pick, though. That is not too far away from either moving up for Tua or just drafting a quarterback of their own.
Speaking of fading borderline Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Tom Brady is also a free agent to be. Where is he rank on your list?
He is first. No, he's ninth. He's right behind Breeze.
He's right behind Breeze. Joe Montana did an interview, a sit-down with our own Mike Silver. And, of course, Montana is, well, he's always at the forefront of, you know, this week because he's Joe freaking Montana. But this week, and he'll make the media rounds, and you always see Joe around this time of year at Super Bowl week.
And Joe, but tell us a little bit more about 1-800-Flowers. Well, let me tell you.
No, he's got his own brand of Skechers, I believe. But these are his two former teams, the 49ers, where he had all of his glory, and the Chiefs, of course, where he played his final two seasons. And Mike Silver asked Montana about that process of going from a place, the only place you've ever known, to kind of starting fresh. And Montana was very honest, talking about how difficult it was, asked specifically what advice he'd give to Brady, Montana, about the possibility of leaving the Patriots and signing with another team. Montana smiled and said, "Don't, if you don't have to. It's a process to go through, and it takes time to get used to the team." He also said that he has fond memories of his times with the Chiefs, and his offensive coordinator, Paul Hackett, was the quarterback's coach in San Francisco, which helped the process and made it an easier process for him in terms of a new playbook and all that. But it is a reminder that we throw around this, "Oh, where's Tom Brady playing? Oh, he'll go to the Chargers, or he'll go to the Colts, or he'll go here." What a gargantuan challenge that would be for Brady, and not going to change his legacy, but it puts a different ending to his story. And you can understand, even, Greg, a guy like Brady, who has long professed his wish to play until he's in his mid-40s, he would have to probably swallow hard before actually deciding to leave New England.
I think hearing Joe Montana, his childhood hero's opinion on it, actually could hold some weight, because
he's one of the only guys
who's ever been in that sort of situation. I thought, if you really listen to what Brady said the last time he spoke, and it's not a surprise, I think he wants to stay in New England. I think the question is, he's not sure if they want to keep him. That's the bigger question to me. It's not whether he wants to leave. I think he would leave if he has to. It's really if they want to keep him, and they meaning Bill Belichick, because Robert Kraft has made it clear the plan is
Robert Kraft said even just days ago that Tom Brady is wanted
back.
It
makes me wonder. The worst case scenario here is that it causes friction and a schism between Kraft and Belichick. That's like the worst case scenario for a Patriots fan, and the best case scenario for basically every other human that is interested in the sport of football.
It's one reminder that, like, we're heading into this free agency period that is going to receive more hoopla than ever before, unless this stuff is sewn up quickly, because of these quarterbacks we're talking about. I don't really think that it's a great idea for any one of them to suddenly start over in their late 30s and 40s with another team. It just seems like you're getting the final year or two of Tom Brady on the Chargers. How is that going to play out?
Right, and I know we'll talk about it, but it really struck me that no quarterback in NFL history had thrown for more than 1,500 yards in their age 42 season before Brady. There basically had never been a quarterback that was a starter for an entire year until Brady last season. So he was by far the greatest 42-year-old quarterback of all time. It's just kind of like, why would you expect him to keep breaking these boundaries at the highest levels? It's just a lot to expect.
And, you know, speaking of Kobe Bryant, everybody, certainly I am, and I know you guys probably are too, are reading a lot about his career and retrospectives and all that. And what's his name? Wojbomb, the ESPN
Adrian Wojnarowski.
Adrian Wojnarowski. He wrote a piece. He knew Brian quite well, and he reflected on his encounters with him through the years, including near the end of Brian's career. He, like Tom Brady, spent 20 years with one team, and he remembers a conversation with Brian where he was saying he was certain that Lakers management was looking to buy him out of his contract and use that amnesty clause that the NBA teams can use to get out from under ugly veteran contracts. And it never came to fruition, but it just reminds me, as you're talking about this, Greg, how, you know, these things, they get tricky at the end when the player is this veteran and he's a legend and he's getting paid a lot of money, but he's no longer helping the team like he once did. It just becomes a tricky situation for all parties. All right. Now, media night, opening night, we talked about it with Kobe and how that was a major topic. Any other kind of takeaways from media night? Greg, I'll start with you on this.
Well, let's think. I like the little bit that Kyle Shanahan talked about where they asked him when he puts in the first 15 play script that is sort of become famous, you know, from Bill Walsh. And Kyle Shanahan's a fairly direct descendant through his father, Mike Shanahan, from Bill Walsh. You know, the famed 15 play script of what they're going to do at the start of the game. And they asked, and I think it was one of our guys, it might have been Dion, that asked him about it. And he said, well, I'll probably put it in like either late Friday night or Saturday morning. And that was, you know, to Dion, that was a surprising answer. And I think it's fascinating. They put in the entire game plan last week. You know, they have all the plays that they possibly could run in the game. But Shanahan, kind of like, I don't know, what we would do as students or we do for our podcast, he waits a little bit to the last minute and then wants to see what he's feeling is the right moment to do it. Well, and then he puts it in. And there are many good reasons, I think, for that.
Well, are you saying he's procrastinating?
No, I'm not saying he's procrastinating. He thinks it's the best way to do it, wait until the end. And so maybe it's not getting stale, that he doesn't get stuck too much, you know, in that I have to do this or that. He sees how the plays go during the week, and it keeps like the whole thing a little fresh going into the Super Bowl.
And coaches are creatures of routine. He's used to doing that every Friday night, right, during the season. When Bill Walsh first started this, wrote about this in Ohio River Offense, he met with Paul Brown on Saturday mornings to go over the openers because he was working on them on Friday nights. That's I think that comes from the Bill Walsh tree.
I think it's also a communication with your star quarterback, with your team in general, that if you put out, like, if we, when we plan our show, if it's a Thursday show and we try to hammer it on a Wednesday morning, we're going to have to do 45 text messages about changes. We have new information, right? And it's like, why not almost wait till the last minute if you're the Niners? The most, as much information as you have, and when you give those plays and you share it, it's as clear and it doesn't change.
Maybe everyone knew this kind of thing already, but it was a rare thing from opening night that seemed like new and different. I don't know.
My one thing, I thought Andy Reid talking about players saying that he's still coming up right now, drawing up new plays that they've never even used to take into the Super Bowl.
I worry about when, like the Chiefs, for instance, I heard them, well, we've got so much extra time. We're going back 13, 15 games with the 49ers, and we're doing all this crazy, like using all that time. And I always, like, you always worry about the teams that just start to do too much. You know, just do what you normally do.
George Kittle got a riser. And he acknowledged, I thought this was a not-so-subtle flex. He waited to share this until he was on the riser at opening night of the Super Bowl. He's played with a torn labrum since 2018. Now, that's a man.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's impressive, but also obviously has not been a major factor in his play because he's playing with more physicality after the catch than any tight end in the NFL. He's blocking as well as any tight end in the NFL. He was first-team All-Pro by a wide. I think PFF had him graded as, like, one of their highest players
I think they
ever.
Said he was their best player in the NFL this season was George Kittle, according to PFF. Were you questioning, Dan, his manhood, like, before this? This is what it took to
certainly
put it
not,
the top?
But it's just next-level stuff. I mean, you have to go to the Shield softball team, and when you see Chris Wessling, you know, playing 17 games on a bad shoulder, it reminds me of Joe Namath having to tape his leg from his ankle to his hip just to get on the field. That's Wes slinging the ball over to Skip at first base.
You also had a cold at one point during that season.
I dealt with some issues.
A lot
bronchial,
on your part. Yeah.
Yeah, and some head cold.
I'll never forget
Wes
taking himself out of the championship game to give me a little more playing time because he thought that was what was best for the team.
A little bit of a sneaky hero boy move, though.
What, taking from myself West? Out yeah. of the game? I want to play, but like, I was 130
for,
pounds.
For his made-for-TV movie.
Well, no, I appreciated a few extra innings.
It was going to be like
– I got on base every at-bat.
Thing was, Shook had to come in. Shook needed some playing time, and it was coming in for Greg, and I just said, we need Greg's defense out there in right field. Take me out.
Greg Selfless. Wanted more attention for it. Got on base every single time if you want to
– Right. No, I was waiting for the humble
Wait,
Brad
Captain
here.
Spiros is on the phone.
That was the legit one.
We got breaking news here. Okay, he's on the phone. He's turning – almost looks like he's turning the boat around while he's talking.
Steering I know. It's like – We're talking, but I shudder to – it's a really – I mean, this – my good friend Mike Valdez-Fowley, his family came from Cuba. So many people in the city came from Cuba and are probably thinking of their families. Like, the 7.7 earthquake is an insane number that I don't want to find out what we're going to find out when we get back. Dan is very concerned about this phone call, though.
Wait, can you hand Captain Spiros the mic a second, Mark?
Absolutely.
Captain Spiros, can we get your comment? I saw you were just on the phone. Is everything okay?
Everything is perfect.
Nothing to be worried about?
If you say good words about the captain, you are safe. Otherwise, you have a problem.
Captain Spiros of the Van Dutch. A hero.
Talk about a real man.
All right. All right, let's
I don't
get
even know
to
how
it.
To turn the boat on.
Also Katie Sowers, the woman who's a Niners coach. Chiefs tattoo. Scandal.
Oh, she's from Kansas, and it was
scandal.
I read that it was a tattoo of the Kansas City skyline, and she actually played, unlike some people on this show, played football herself at a professional level in Kansas.
For 8 years,
a hero ball. You don't need to tell us why she should be a coach. She's certainly qualified. But I'm just talking about the scandal.
Did you just simply set me up for that? Like,
she said, you know, she's a proud Kansas Cityan.
All right. Well, if the Niners lose, you'll know why.
She got more, you know, from the people there, she got more people around her probably than just about anyone at opening night. It is pretty cool. Kyle Shanahan brought her from Atlanta where she was also an assistant. I also liked hearing that my guy Tom Brady, you know, was congratulating Jimmy G. People forget Jimmy G's got 2 Super Bowl rings.
I mean, they had a bit of a thorny relationship towards the end of their Patriots
the
run together, didn't they?
Well,
Jimmy
G was coming for his job. So.
He just wanted to be in the news cycle this week.
He's probably annoyed that became
You know what else he's
public.
Annoyed about? Dante Scarnecchia is out as offensive coordinator. They say he's retired, but I think he was quietly fired by Bill Belichick.
Why would he? Why would this future Hall of Fame first assistant coach to make the Hall of Fame ever?
But this
ever
is some real like thrown of
get thrown out
sleaze disaster
right.
stuff. Now you lose Scarnecchia
just out of pure mendacity.
Ooh-wee.
Have to be a little panicked, Greg. Yeah, in the ride over here towards the boat, you were claiming that it just doesn't matter and you're fine with the Patriots.
Our podcast,
caving in, but.
Has covered more Super Bowls than the Jets and Browns have ever been in by
Look
a factor of
out.
5.
Why do you need to go in that direction?
I'm just saying, like, why
in that direction
about?
Do you need to go?
I've
it's
had
just
all this
not
beautiful
a good look,
time.
Right? It's an ugly
I've had
look.
All this great time. I'm fine with 20 years
by
of total
a factor
darkness.
Of
Bring
5.
It. Right. It's been. It's
just
what?
Say that we've been to one combined.
You've been to one combined. Well, I was trying to do the math. How many have we covered for the Patriots? 5, I think. 5
it
or
feels endless.
5 of 6. Yeah.
Yeah. Not anymore though. It's over. All right. And finally, let's give the last word from Media Night. I'm sorry, opening night. They rebranded it a few years back. I struggle with that. Richard Sherman, who's obviously one of the more thoughtful NFL players, and he's a Los Angeles native, so of course he was going to be asked about Kobe. Let's hear what Sherman had to say.
Well, he meant a lot. He meant a lot to everyone. You know, he meant a lot to the city of L.A., and he's a tremendous idol. Like I said, there's not enough praise I can give him. There's not enough words in my vernacular and my vocabulary to give him the praise and the respect that he deserves, but he deserves every inch, every ounce of respect, every ounce of gratitude, and he gave me a ton of inspiration. I'm sure he inspired millions and billions and trillions of other kids. You know, there's no limit to the impact he's had on my city and on cities around the world.
Extremely well put. All right, that's what's happening in the news. Now let's get to it. We're on a boat, so sink or swim narratives nailed it. Of Super Bowl 54. I asked you guys to kind of throw out some storylines that you've seen popping up over the last week or so, And I don't know whether you agree with the narrative or you're here to debunk it.
But they are narratives.
Are you throwing out any? You seem like the narrative guy.
I have a couple, but I want to just tee you guys up. Mark, you seem like the type of guy. In fact, I know you to be the type of guy who you exist mostly to just shoot down things. So I'm going to assume you're not going to agree with either of these. Here's the first one. Everyone assumes a shootout is on tap in Super Bowl 54.
Well, even my own prediction for somewhere on our website, try to go find that somewhere. It was like 41-40 because it just like the first thing that came to mind. Like, of course,
you're not going to say it's not a shootout now, are you?
No. So I mean,
are you trying to say that they don't promote the Super Bowl predictions piece? Because that probably gets promoted more than any article. Just because you haven't checked out NFL.com.
It's not the main point of this conversation.
And let's not, this is not the day.
Would you like me to answer this question, or are we just going to go off into 42 different verbal rivulets before I give you my answer?
This is not the day to get
verbal rivulets on a real rivulet. I love it.
What a statement.
I would point to this, number one, that last year at this time, we were coming out of an AFC championship that was a shootout between the Chiefs and Patriots, and with a Rams team that everyone just assumed would score 35, 40 points. Not everyone, but that was sort of this. Who knows what could happen in this thing. That's my case number
so what
eight.
Are you saying?
This game could be 28-7. This game could be 28-3. I just don't assume.
Oh, you think it could be a blowout?
I think it could be a blowout, number one. I don't assume that both teams are going to drop 50 points on each other.
That's a good point. Mark raises a good point. The two quarterbacks with the highest points per game in NFL history probably are going to have a low-scoring game. I'm just kidding. But
no,
these are like
it's improbable.
Scoring
it's
you know,
it's bad when Wes is taking
it. It's improbable.
You never see the scientist turn on another. Or
listen, I'm not saying this. It's a narrative because it's partially logical. But last year, not a single person was talking about 13-3.
Are you debunking this, or are you supporting that this will be a high-scoring game?
it's sinking.
It's very confusing.
Debunking in process, because I am upset with myself for picking 41-40. It seems too boring and predictable.
And this, Mark, is the wrong day to get on NFL.com promotionally, because I went to their homepage just today, and right there in the headline stack, as they call it, Sessler : why I want Jameis, Lamar to win a title.
You know, listen, I believe that with all my heart. With all my heart, I believe that column I wrote.
Timely.
I mean, when I think of Mark's attachment and support of Jameis Winston over the years, just like the energy that he's invested, finally wanting him to get over the top, it's nice to see that getting promoted as one of the big stories.
It was a very natural storyline to come to. They asked me to pick 10 people that had not won a Super Bowl. It was 10 people that I'd like to see make the Super Bowl
that had not been there.
And tell me it would not be intriguing to see Jameis Winston with some other team get into the Super Bowl.
I like the wording,
totally
though,
weird.
Sessler. Why I want Jameis, Lamar to win a title.
I don't
believe a word of that.
I feel like I've been honking about Jameis on this podcast for 4 years, and all you do is dismiss him.
Well, you know,
you're a man of contradictions.
I can change my mind occasionally.
All right, Wes, here's a narrative that you threw out there. Jimmy G equals Bob Greasy? Debunk or support?
Give me a break with this one. We're debunking it. What are you talking about? First of all, there was only one quarterback this year to finish in the top five of completion percentage, yards per attempt, and touchdown passes, and that was Jimmy G. This was not all running. He's 23-5 as a starter under Kyle Shanahan. The other 49ers quarterbacks under Kyle Shanahan are 3-20. So he has an 820 winning percentage, the highest in NFL history. All other San Francisco 49ers quarterbacks have a 167 winning percentage under Kyle Shanahan. What happened when Bob Greasy got injured in 1962? His backup, Earl Morrow, went 9-0 and won first-team All-Pro. Because he could do the same job Bob Greasy could do. The 49ers quarterbacks can't do the same job Jimmy G's doing. Give me a break with this narrative.
Nothing about Jimmy G's skill set suggests the team doesn't totally trust him. They totally trust him. And I do think that it was interesting to hear Kurt Warner talk about it on NFL Network today, that if you know you look at these game plans and these scripts, that if Kurt Warner back in the day with the Rams as a young starter was told you're going to be throwing the ball probably 8 or 9 times in a half in the Super Bowl, that he would totally revolt. That quarterbacks, if you're Jimmy G, you want to throw the ball 25, 30 times, no matter what you tell anyone else.
Thank you for this, Wes.
He's spent money on third downs, too. He's been a great third down quarterback.
These two games are pretty random. There are almost no other games they had all season that were quite like this. With that said, I do think, for instance, in the the Vikings game after he made the interception and then they, you know, went pretty run heavy. I think they totally trust Jimmy G, but I think Kyle Shanahan knows how good his defense is, how good his running game is, and that Jimmy G mistakes is the riskiest thing they have because he makes a lot of mistakes. He takes a lot of sacks. He fumbles the ball a lot.
So you're saying Kyle Shanahan's a good coach?
Right. I'm just saying that he is the highest variance of a really great team, and he's facing a quarterback who's not only makes way more big plays and is more talented, but makes way, way fewer mistakes. So if he can keep a lid under Jimmy G, like,
two
why not?
Two things could be true.
Yeah, yeah.
You could trust your quarterback, which Kyle Shanahan, I believe, does, but also know that your running game should be the motor against certain teams, depending on the game plan, as they were in the two
and
playoff games.
This sets up that way. I mean, the Chiefs' defense is about as imbalanced, you know, when you look at the efficiency pass versus run as almost any defense in the league. They're a really good pass defense, pretty deep secondary, you know, solid pass rush, good scheme against the pass, and a terrible run defense.
Well,
like, it's very similar to the last couple ones.
Chiefs defense is better or even above average? Debunk or confirm?
Led yourself into that trap.
I did. I don't think they're that much better. And I've
Than last year.
They're a little better. But I watched them, and I guess I'm putting a lot of stock in the two playoff games versus the entire season. They haven't played well in the postseason. Everyone looks concerned. Everyone in this boat right now is looking very concerned.
Well, Erica
and I don't
asked
know
us
why.
To take a look at a nearby yacht. Is that what we're looking at?
What is the motivation here, Erica?
It was just a really beautiful boat, and I thought you would like to look at it.
It was.
I mean, there are people sunning on the
Erica's
front of it.
Erica's very
that part
into
of
boats.
The...
You used to own a boat. You're a yachter. You're.
I wish
you said
I was
you
a
know
yachter.
A lot.
I'm not a yachter,
a
but I do. I've been
is
driving
yachter
boats.
A word?
I don't think so, but I've been driving boats since I was 12. I love them.
Since
wow.
12.
We're on a beautiful 55-footer, and Greg's like, you think I know anything about boats? I was like, well, you
Why
know numbers.
We didn't have any context
you can know it's big.
You're telling me you've been in a more beautiful Super Bowl locale than this?
Never.
Come on. This what we've had for the last half an hour beats everything.
We're cheating live here, folks.
I wonder what they're doing in Ohio right now.
I mean, the Chiefs defense seems pointless. My point is, they seem entirely beatable, and they might be a little bit better than they were a year ago, but are they above average? I don't think so. They've got three good players, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, Tyrann Mathieu. Just about every other part of their defense feels like a weakness.
I think in recent weeks, you go down 24-0, you go down 17-7. I mean, right. you are vulnerable, but they have the offense that almost makes it a non-issue on some
part
level.
Part of my thought is, I mean, when you really just like line up the matchups, I think Kyle Shanahan is looking at this Chiefs defense, and he's loving it.
He's licking his chops.
Like, if you just look at the matchups, the 49ers seem like the better team.
Mark Sessler, confirm or debunk? Anyone on either team talking about not getting enough respect from football heads?
What happened to sink or swim, by the way?
Sink or swim.
Sink that one. That one needs to sink
right,
to the bottom
overboard.
Of the Miami River. Because it's happened a little bit with Richard Sherman, and that's not a surprising person to utter these kinds of comments necessarily. But you hear it for a little bit on both teams. You know, we're not getting the respect we deserve.
Yeah,
we're not getting the attention.
Stuff.
It's like, I would just say, though, the Niners have been glowed over all season, and the Chiefs are the team everyone kind of wanted in this position from before the season. So where is this lack of respect, lack of interest coming from?
Maybe Adam Rank picked out the 49ers to go 3-13.
Oof.
People have been really holding.
Why do you need
them?
To take a coworker and then just drag them off the end of the boat that way?
No, he talks about it more than he loves it.
He talks about it, but when you bring
wonderful
it up
boats
about it, you know.
All around us. All right, Wes.
Thought I did a good job there, by the way.
You did nicely.
All right.
I'm proud of you. Wes, sink or swim, Patrick Mahomes is off to the
Mark
best
Brady
start
is very uncomfortable
in history.
Right now. Shadowy league figure with all the nice boats around us.
It's not our fault there are nice boats everywhere in Miami.
Well, if we're saying worst take gets thrown overboard, Greg goes overboard because he's been spouting this off for the last few weeks with no
Running
regard
his mouth.
For – no regard for perspective, no regard for a wide view of history, no regard
no
for
respect.
Actually the truth, which this, Patrick Mahomes in his breakout year, his great year, 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, Dan Marino did that 4 decades ago in his second season. Try paying 1984 prices for a house today.
Mm.
You've had six passing revolutions since Dan Marino did this. For him, that's about the equivalent of going for 65 touchdowns and 6,000 yards now. It would blow everyone's mind. It would blow Greg's mind. That was the best start in NFL history, Dan Marino, Patrick Mahomes.
Here's my thing. They are the only two, I think, in the conversation.
I think Mahomes Kurt Warner is not far away.
Mahomes,
from
right. Yeah, Kurt Warner, it's tricky. He's older, but you're right, is right there. But here's the thing. Mahomes in his first year was the MVP. He was the best player in the league.
His second year in the NFL.
Right. I'm saying first 2 years as starter. I would have counted Aaron Rodgers' first 2 years, which
well,
he had
Dan
to wait.
Marino was busy playing and winning rookie of the year when he was a rookie.
That's fine.
On the
dang.
His second year, he's the number three quarterback in the league, I would put him at. So what quarterbacks in their first 2 years would be a top three quarterback those 2 years? Now, another part of it is absolutely that I watched every game. Like, do we respect the football heads' opinions who just watch guys on weekends, you know, or watch players when they're in primetime games and in playoff games and makes big opinions? I'm not going to have that strong a take off of Dan Marino when I really didn't see him play
back
then.
So you're just going to ignore that he ever happened because
no,
it makes
I'm going to look at the I'm going
to
look at the All-Pros.
There,
his second year in terms
gonna
of All-Pro,
go
he had a little less of a year. They would be they would
he
be
led
right
the league in everything even the next year after that.
Then my
you want him to go away because it's convenient for your argument, but Dan Marino exists, and you can't throw him overboard.
No, I'm not. But they would be similar, and it also goes to my that quarterbacks are better now than they were. Like, athletes are better than they were before.
Wes,
like, you didn't watch
him?
Dan Marino that year, so it's, like, very hard to, like, know how good he really was.
Isn't this all kind of pointless? Because haven't we talked to him in this podcast that's pointless to argue over players from different generations?
I'm just correcting Greg for refusing to pay any respect to anyone who came before Patrick Mahomes.
I said, he's one of – at worst, he's one of the top two quarterbacks ever in terms of his first 2 years as starter. And the physical skill set and the athleticism and everything else that he has, it's obviously better because athletes are better, and he's like a next generation – like, this is not a hot take.
Dan Marino went like half a year without getting sacked. You're bad-mouthing his skill set because you never really watched him.
All right, everybody calm down, scientists. There's no time for scientist shenanigans in the lab on a boat. Just doesn't make sense. Logically, you can't have a lab set up on a boat.
I mean, we've made plenty of time for it. There is a downstairs here.
I want to throw out a narrative that connects to what we just talked about, though, which I'm hearing a lot of. But people, what is the old line? Those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it.
Yes.
You know, back in 1984, everyone said, oh, Dan Marino, you know, he got wiped out by the Niners, coincidentally. He'll be back. You know, everyone seems to, you know, ooh, Patrick Mahomes is on the scene of the Super Bowl, and something tells me this isn't going to be his first bite of the apple. You don't know. And it actually speaks to a larger point that goes beyond Mahomes or anything. And it's something that's popped up time after time in the years covering the sport, is that when you get to this point, you need to win, because the future promises nothing, and the history of the NFL is littered with teams that thought they were just at the verge of getting to the mountaintop, and even though they didn't get there, we'll get there next year. The Atlanta Falcons come to mind. The Jacksonville Jaguars come to mind. That's just recently. And
Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers.
Drew Brees. He did win it, but he has not been back in the decade since.
And Mahomes is in a great situation to have a long, successful run because, like Tom Brady, he is on a team that is well-run from the top down, and you get the feeling that they will not let that roster go to rot. And because he's so good, he could then fill in the gaps the way Brady once did. However, nothing is promised. And it's so important that these teams, and we know that, as the famous Damashekism, is this a must-win game? Yes, obviously both teams are doing everything in their power to win the Super Bowl. But the team that loses, an old Francesism, we're going to have Chris Mad Dog Russo show on Thursday. The old Francesa line was, there's nothing worse than losing in the Super Bowl. You'd rather lose in the title game than lose in the Super Bowl because there are scars that come with it. Now, whether you believe in that or not is another conversation, but just in general, there are no promises. Win the game you got here.
All that is true, but if you're in the AFC West, don't you have to look at it from now on as, I've got to build my team specifically to stop Patrick Mahomes and
yes.
the Chiefs.
In the division, and they have an edge, but Andy Reid is a great example. I mean, I keep talking about how he's, you know, maybe the most influential coach of the last 20 years. He hasn't been in a Super Bowl since 15 years ago. They weren't, you know, they lost that one. He has not been back since. He's had a lot of good teams since then, and he hasn't been able to get back. Kyle Shanahan who's coming off, you know, when he was in the Super Bowl as a coordinator, one of the toughest moments like you can possibly imagine. He knows it. He said watching those Mike Shanahan teams for a while, you know, as a kid, he didn't think the AFC was even allowed to win a Super Bowl. He knows how precious it is and how brutal it is.
That was an insane run of dominance by the NFC. I mean, I think if you want to look at a group of people that faithfully return to the Super Bowl every year, it seems to be us.
We're the one guaranteed.
Yeah, we do make it every year.
Why until this year? Because
there's some events that have transpired.
I mean, the waters are relatively calm underneath the boat at the moment.
Famous last words, my friend. Although, like I said,
Captain. Oh my God!
Captain Spiros is under control, so I'm under.
That was for the listeners.
I have extreme confidence in the captain.
The captain looked back at me with a look of panic.
Anybody else want to throw one out there that I haven't touched on, but you definitely want to hit? Mark, you had one, I know.
Oh, I'm like a little annoyed that people have dismissed my sandwich proposition from much earlier on in the year.
Look, Mark's holding the microphone handle really tight again.
Sorry. But
you could see the veins bulging out of your, like, underneath your knuckles.
Just how my hands work.
There's no
reason.
I don't
like that.
It puts everybody on edge.
Why can't
Trina
I just
Lagalini.
Do, why can't
well,
I
don't
just do it?
It doesn't, yeah, I'm,
do what
I'm
I
used to it
to
this
do.
Way. It does not put me on edge.
Do not try to blow up another of my narratives. This was the one that a player will miss.
Your knuckles are literally throbbing.
Ricky, can you get a close shot of the way Mark handles it?
A player will miss playing time due to being
get off the boat with
attacked
rheumatoid arthritis.
By an animal.
Oh, go ahead.
A player will be miss playing time at least part of a game due to being attacked by an animal, and there is still an opportunity for that.
Well,
Miami is a rough and tumble environment. A lot can happen between now and
Sunday. We saw
two rats
fighting on the way here.
Iguanas falling out of trees.
Wes and I saw like a 20-pound iguana sitting around. It was huge.
That thing was sturdy.
It was big guy. And we saw some turkey vultures on the way.
Yeah. Turkey vultures.
A lot of crazy animals. You're right. If this is the city where an animal could take a player out.
Is this how I'm holding this?
See, I feel
does
more
that count?
Calm looking
what,
at
Mike, Mark, rather.
Mike Sessler.
We've only done 1,000 shows together. Greg has no idea who he works
Mike
with.
Mike Sessler.
Does it count if an animal hurts a player during the week and then they miss the game?
It's got to be
100%,
on the field.
100%.
So with Mark's predictions, it's always like a horseshoes thing, though.
We'll
if it's close,
I'll
I get it.
I'll give it to you.
I'll
give it to you.
It was not just in game. I don't believe it was in the field or off the field.
We got some music on the boat next door.
Oh, we got people dancing.
It's like a pontoon boat.
Awesome.
How about the narrative that, like, ooh, the 49ers are old school? Like, give me a break. They're, like, the most modern, sort of creative, inventive with their running game that of any team in the league. If any other team could imitate what Kyle Shanahan does, they would do it. No one can do it. He's ahead of the game. It's like, oh, they're old school. This proves that running the football still has a place. Yeah, if you've got Kyle Shanahan, because he's off in like 2035, people are going to be doing it. It's stupid.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Although it is interesting that the quarterback threw it 16 times or whatever.
It's definitely interesting. It's just not old school.
I think it bubbled up along with the Titans. You know, this was not the playoff approach we thought we'd get back in last January or February when everyone was hiring gurus to set passing games afire.
Oh, we just passed the mojito bar. I like that.
Whoa, Miami.
That was their plan against the Vikings, run it down their throat. But they fell into the Packers game plan. Like, they were going to pass, and then they thought, why are we even passing on these guys? They're not even close.
Didn't need to.
Did I mention, by the way, and I'll mention it again, that this wonderful podcast aboard Captain Spiros' ship, the Around the NFL podcast, is presented by DiGiorno. Stock up on DiGiorno pizza for the big game. We are now, I think, about to soon head back toward port, and it's time to get ready to say goodbye. A reminder once again, if you are in the Miami area and you want to see us live in person talking a little ball, and then afterwards we're of course meet and talk with the fans, come on down to the Miami Improv, get tickets, and we'll have a great old time together on Thursday night, 8 o'clock showtime, correct?
Yep, 8 o'clock door, 7:30.
7:30 showtime.
Doors are at 6:30.
All right, don't
show
miss
the news. Show is at 7:30.
Yeah. Show is at 7:30.
Don't show up at
close
8.
Enough. Any other thoughts? Thursday, again, will be our proper Super Bowl 54 preview with our game picks and all that.
And Mad Dog Chris Russo, as you mentioned,
and the great
us.
Mad Dog. I was saying we're to Dan, excited about this.
Oh, I was saying to Dan, because, I mean, you know, we all I grew up listening with my dad in the car to Mike and the Mad Dog for hundreds and hundreds of hours. And, you know, I told him a couple times, hey, we have this guest on or this guest on, and it's all a nice experience, I think, in his mind. He's happy that it's happening. But when I mentioned Mad Dog Russo, it's like, oh, wow, because there's a, that goes back. That's deep
like, son,
roots.
I finally respect you.
The respect was there before.
You got some other grown man on your podcast.
I wonder how many people at NFL Network would not be there if it were not for Mike and the Mad Dog.
Well, they certainly left a huge imprint, and one of their favorite.
Greg sneered at that, but like I am saying that there are maybe the number is 4 or 5, but it was engine
it's
behind.
You
too. Yeah. Okay, so it's
but
us.
I'll say yes. Mike and the Mad Dog were not influential. Greg, you nailed this.
I'm not saying that at all.
I just had one of the most serious all the people I've ever seen.
I'm rolling through
they're
all the
Greg
people
Bedard.
On our air in my mind. Give me one. Give me one.
Hey, Tommy Curran made a big.
Give me one. It's like Omar Ruiz. Yeah, he wouldn't have made it without old Mad Dog.
All right, well, you got two of them on this boat.
Omar Ruiz is the one guy in our company that made it without ever tracking Chris Russo. So he beat the odds. Anyway, we're excited for Mad Dog and talking more ball. And thank you again to this wonderful crew aboard the Van Dutch, led by Captain Spiros, who, despite the threat of a looming natural disaster, never blinked. And we thank you for that, Captain.
I thank you so much.
He's a good man. Thank you to everybody for having us. This is part of the Stella Fleet, by the way. And if you want to, if you're, again, in the area, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you could come on down to the Port de Stella and get loose, right, Ricky?
I guess, yeah. But they got these boats. We got some celebrities coming down. I heard Priyanka Chopra is going to be here.
Chopra? Wow.
Jane Slater is going to be here.
Wait, Chopra she did the
Thursday
Night Football theme song.
Well, we once had a producer who kept promising we were going to get Priyanka on the show, and it never happened. It fell
a grand
through.
Failure by that one producer.
It fell through, but I did enjoy her song "Welcome to My City," the original intro to Thursday Night Football. People forget, but
yeah,
beautiful song.
Check out Port de Stella, and you too can be on this awesome yacht. This is the best podcast we've ever done.
All right,
I don't know, content wise, I've been like sightseeing and, you know, doing my thing on this yacht.
It's gonna be great. And follow along the ATN podcast on Instagram for all our exploits. And the sun's out, and the skies are blue, and there's a gentle breeze, and I'm on the water. I need a drink, so let us begin that process of getting the old Zeuser a little loose himself. This is Dan Hansis.
The old Zeuser a little looser.
Signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, Captain Spiros, and the whole crew of the Van Dutch. Thank you. Till Thursday.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.